So today we, as we mentioned a number of times, we are celebrating the fulfillment of prophecies. My son this morning, as I told them about, you know, today is the day that Jesus rose 2,000 years ago. The number 2,000 just doesn't register so well. So he asked, you know, was grandmother there? He said, no, it's way before that. I said, was great-grandmother there? Because we still have one grand. No, it was before. It was way before. And I said, okay, you know, we'll explain that one a little bit later. But you've got to know that in the biblical tradition and the Hebrew tradition, for thousands of years, there were prophecies, and they meticulously kept record of it. And so many prophecies in the Old Testament of Jesus and how he would come and how he would live and how he would fulfill. And the Easter was the culmination of that fulfillment, and it was Jesus dying, the Lamb that came to take the sin away, and we celebrate that. Last week we had a message just on, considering the silence that came just after Jesus breathed his last breath, and that silence is not necessarily separation, as some of you have experienced in the past, but silence was God's just anticipation and hoping and the unfolding of his plan. And so we celebrate that seeming confusion for the disciples. Just as Jesus died, they went to go and fish again, kind of disillusioned, heart sore. But that confusion was not a sign of God being actually out of control. He was still in control. And then the sense of hopelessness that some had, that God is a God of hope. And it's so interesting that my friend Dirk read that Romans 15, verse 13. If you can just put it up. Now, just as I want you to take note of this scripture, it says, may the God of hope fill you with all joy and peace in believing, so that by the power of the Holy Spirit you may abound in hope. Afrikaans says, mag die God van die hoop julle vervul met alle blydskap en vrede deur die geloof, dat julle oorvloedig kan wees in die hoop deur die krag van die Heilige Gees. And God is a God of hope. You've got to know this morning. The Easter that we celebrate is the God of hope. Hope is not a mood that God has. It's not a feeling that God has when, you know, all his children are united and believe in him, and then his hope. God is the God of hope. It's part of his attributes. And so when God looked at Jesus, it was filled with hope, seeing that his plan is unfolding. And Jesus' death was not a hopeless moment for God. Father, it was just wait 3 days, and he rose again. When God spoke into your and my life, hopeful, saw these fathers and mothers dedicating their children this morning and praying over them, it's with hope. I can tell you with even more hope, God is anticipating the unfolding of their lives. And so Easter has got to have some relevance on today. It's not just some historic event of Jesus being crucified and then raised from the dead, and he had followers and, you know, that kind of multiplied. Now it's got a bearing on you and me today. And by his Spirit, he wants to come and speak into our hearts. He wants to come and grip your heart again. He wants to overwhelm your heart and mind by his love. And so we have asked, instead of me trying to kind of go through all the prophecies and how Jesus fulfilled them this morning, that might happen in some churches, and that would be great. We have felt to just give two people opportunity to share their story, that you in some way might see the God of hope that raised Jesus from the dead and see his work in a person like you and me, and how God is at work in their lives, and some way identify and see how God is at work in your life. You might be at a different stage, different life stage, season of your life or so, but it's the same God that wants to work. And so we're going to start off with ask Mike Foster, if you can come up so long. Mike likes to call me Dominie. As you can see, we dress differently. But some of you might have gotten a little, you know, kind of e-flyer or saw a poster at the OK Mini Mart or so. It says God came to show His love. What happens if God shows His love to people like you and me? So we on the two ends of the scale. In between are the rest of us. But Mike, would you just maybe just share your story of how Jesus came into your life?
Sure. There's a lot of you today. So basically 2 weeks ago when Ruan came to see me, I kind of prepared myself to give him a whole lot of excuses why I shouldn't be talking today. And during the conversation, he just let me speak, and you know, he gives you that look, and I realized that I'm putting myself deeper into this because everything I shared, he said, was quite relevant. So I hope that today something... I think it's a bit scary, some of the stuff I'm about to tell you, but I'm glad the kids are at church, at school church. So I grew up in a small town called Simonstown. I had an amazing mother. She was, her name was Teresa, and she was, in fact, exactly like Mother Teresa. I could bring schoolies home, and she would just open up her heart and cook for them, and she was absolutely amazing. And the amazing thing is she died over this period today, 8 years ago. She had an asthma attack. And during the period, she went into a coma. And by legal rights, you got to keep them awake or on machines for 72 hours. It was exactly this time. And she passed away 2 days after... my stepdad's birthday, which was it's quite a sad moment, but also an amazing moment, because at her funeral was the first time I realized how close to God she was, and it was the last time I think I spoke in church, but it was about her. And I got to the church in Komiki, and there were so much people there, like people I remember from very young. A lot of people I didn't know, which was obviously a whole group of people that came from church. But the church was so packed that everybody sat outside. So it was quite amazing. And I kind of realized in this last 2 weeks when I was preparing for what I was going to say today, that God spoke to me for the first time so clearly. He revealed things like my life became a film. So you start preparing for this mentally, and you start thinking, what should I talk about? And in the last 2 weeks, He reminded me that He sent people in my life from the day I was born right through to today. And as a story, I tell my story, I'll let you guys know about those people. I'll just say God sent. Then you'll know God sent those people. Okay, so the second guy is my stepdad. My mom and dad, my biological father was a submariner. He was completely wild. He loved life to the fullest. He said he was born with nothing. He's going to die with nothing. And he did. He was married 3 times. And really soft heart, had a good person, and he never spoke bad about anybody, but he loved life. He loved partying. He loved life to the fullest, and he really, really lived this way. At 16, he took me to a strip club, which I thought was a nightclub. So, yeah, he was amazing. At 16, he was amazing. Kind of godsent as well, but... my stepdad was, he came into my life when I was 5, very traditional, very Afrikaans, but all the structure I needed, God sent. I was in primary school. I don't know who failed sub 8 twice, but I had ADHD, and I think at the time they were still experimenting with the drugs, and I was the rat lab. So schooling was extremely difficult for me. I had a long, difficult time at school, but God gifted me with the ability to play sports, whether it was cricket, tennis, rugby. I excelled, and it was my escape route to be the main guy, to sort of kind of hide that I was really battling with academics. Eventually, I landed up in Simonstown High School. It's where you get, where you go when you get kicked out of Fishick School. So standard 8, 9, and 10 was a great year for me. I landed up playing first team rugby in standard 8 already. Was a main guy, bit of a jock. In standard 9, I fell in love for the first time to a girl by the name of Vanessa. Matriculated, and in the first of February, the year after I matriculated, Vanessa took her life, and I found her with a bullet hole through her main artery of her heart. This was an exceptionally bad time for me. I turned to doing all sorts of weird things, and I was walking down the street in Simonstown, and I was feeling like life was just gray, black. I had no direction. I had no degrees. I didn't know what I was doing. I was a barman in a junior aides mess in the naval base. And I was walking down the road, and I actually realized that I walked past the place that I was working. And this guy out of nowhere, he was a lieutenant in the Navy. He came over to me and he said, Mike, there's this huge Defense Force week, rugby week, and Naval Base Simonstown needs a center. Would you come and play? And at the time, that was God sent, because I was so lost. And I never really was, I wasn't walking with Jesus then. I didn't know God, the strength that God can provide you with. So sports for me was the outreach and the salvation for me. Long story short, landed up playing and my nickname was Civi. Landed up playing for right through the week. We landed up Naval Base Simonstown, landed up playing against Nine Side, which is an army side. So it was Air Force, Police Force, all of them. And my opposition was Tinus Lanier. I don't know if you know, he's passed away recently with the same disease as yours. And Chester Williams was also in the same side. We landed up beating Nine Side, and I landed up making the Western Province Defense side, so I toured with Chester and Tinus, which was pretty cool. They then got called up to Western Province. Rugby became professional. I think apartheid was starting to lose its coolness. So things were pretty cool. My life was starting to come back together, and I met the second girl that I fell in love with. And in 1995, funny enough, during the World Cup, in March, I had a son with this girl called Kyle. He's 24 today. And that relationship kind of didn't work out. Another sort of disappointment in my life, I had to walk away from not just losing a loved one, but becoming a weekend dad. And that was pretty tough. I think my heart started really hardening. And I started getting mixed up with the wrong crowd. Got into the drug scene, where the nightclubs and Vortex parties was my church, and God was the DJ. But it was really bad. It was 13, 14 years of sort of weekend drug abuse. I had a really good job at the time. I was in sales, so it kind of gave me enough money, and I lived for basically providing enough money to go and party on weekends and take drugs. At 38, 38 years old, I remember sitting the week after a party, and I was grinding my teeth. Life looked gray again. I never had sports really to look at. looked at my best friend and I said, who was partying with me. I said, dude, I'm 38. I'm like, 2 years' time, I'm 40. I got a history of bad decisions in 2006. I met a girl, we were both on drugs. Some really bad things happened. I didn't have the heart to forgive. And I had another child. Her name is Gabriella. For 13 years, I couldn't even admit that she was my child. Due to these circumstances, the unforgiving heart. There were lawyers involved, DNA tests. I decided to financially contribute to Gabriella, but not to be part of her life. I would see her when she was 21. Which is not a decision I was proud of. It's something that was itching me a lot. And so here I am, 38 years old. What do I do? And I had two choices. Looked at my best friend. I'm 38. Oh, my gosh, he's 55. So I wasn't going to get him to come to rehab with me. And if I went to rehab, I worked in a company called Equity, and I actually met my wife, which I'll honor later. She's a big part of the story. And Peter, who's now my boss. And it was a biblically based company. So I had religion there, but I also had my life as as a drug abuser. Where were you now? So there's this decision I made. I wasn't very proud of. At 38, I needed to make a decision what I'm going to do. So I thought I had two choices. Go back to sport. It helped me before, got me through losing a loved one. Surely it can help me. And I don't have to go to drugs and admit that I'm a drug addict to everybody I worked with. I don't have to go to rehab. So off I went. I joined the gym, joined the spinning class, and I was a member of the spinning class and realized after a short period of time, but hold on, I'm still relapsing. So I'm not doing drugs every weekend, but I might be doing it once a month. So being a member wasn't really helping me out. So I decided to become a spinning instructor. So if I got early morning classes and I've got a commitment, I've got the goodness of my mother in me, commitment's a commitment, I must go give a spinning class. So I conquered the drugs, becoming a spinning instructor. In 2013, and this is actually where the story really gets fun, in 2013, I met my wife through the IT company that I was working for. Still the biblical-based company. I worked there for 18 and a half years. She threw her end-of-the-year function. And in the following year, in December, after meeting her, we went on a small holiday. She pushed me into a foamy on a surfboard. And I turned around after it and I said, this is what I want to do. I want to surf. So I had the privilege of falling in love with my wife and surfing at the same time. How cool is that? God sent. So this is where the conversion already started. While I was preparing for this mentally, I realized that God started really playing a part in my life when I met my wife. Definitely God sent. And she introduced me to guys like Ivan. I was like, yo, what a cool oak. He's, all I knew actually about Ivan, I didn't know he was part of Josh Jen, but I knew he was a pastor. Why? Because when my wife and I decided to get married, we asked him if he would marry us. We weren't even belong to the church at the time, but and his response was, no, I'm too shy. So yeah, I knew Ivan was a pastor, and Nikki was a shaper. So I had a first encounter or discussion around God when I went and picked up my board at Nikki, and he was busy shaping my board. He said, "Dude, you want to have a cup of coffee?" I said, "Yeah, cool." And at this time, my wife just lost her mom, and he turned around and said, "How's your wife coping?" And I looked at him and I said, compared to me, extremely well, but she's very close to God. And it made me realize at the point that God gives strength to almost anybody. And no matter what you go through, if you've got God next to you, you can get through it. It was a clear message. Then we decided in 2016, we got married. But prior to that, we went through to Hillsong for the marriage counseling. Now, the last time I went to church was, I was in boarding school for 3 years in Saldanha. We were actually forced to go to church. And so I did Holy Communion in the morning, the Catholic, which I never quite felt comfortable with the priests, and praying to Mary just didn't quite fit with me. And in the evenings, we went to Enfia Church, which nog helped, yeah. So in the evenings when we got and the pastor started talking with a dwemini, it literally put me into a coma. And I can recall him saying the one... This guy's having a holy sleep. It's fine. So, during the upbringing and the religion those years, or the churches those years, and I always had a really difficult time with religion. I always thought it separated the human race. Developed all these beliefs and had serious religious issues. So my wife then said, we're going to church. And that was about 2 years ago. And I sat in church for 2 years unsaved. Every Sunday. Why? Why would I do that? Why? Number one, I'm scared of my wife, and she told me to come. And God sent. And during the 2 years, I wrestled with God. I sat here every Sunday thinking, why is the pastor, why is the dwemini, why is whoever stands up here talking? I felt like they were talking directly at me, and I thought, whoa. You'd look around and know, and when the worship started, I thought, what's going on here? This is a concert. I felt really out. Didn't feel comfortable at all. I had all these religious concerns, challenges, and in November 2018, my wife was in China. So I had no fear factor around me. I asked Borant and Mike Oxley to come over for a braai so I could share a little. It wasn't really planned that I was going to share a little, but I think I kind of subconsciously knew. So Mike and Borant come. This is quite a cool story. I got the fire going. I'm busy preparing a salad in the kitchen. And I hear Byron, you know when Byron starts doing this? And I'm like making the salad, he's behind me, and I hear, yes, Jesus. And I'm thinking, okay, he's here. What's going on? So Byron was started, and I'm obviously being in sales my whole life, probing is something I do naturally. And he was so delicate, it's like, I could see him probing the whole night. He's, I'm like, nah. And then eventually, Mike looked at me and said, I know you got religious concerns. Turn or burn, let it out. That's basically how it did. And I poured my heart out, told him basically everything I'm telling you guys. A lot of the stuff that I've never really admitted before. And we sat down on the couch and... they said, okay, you need to now ask Jesus to enter your life. You need to walk with Jesus if it's what you want to do. And I said, yes, I don't want to go to hell. I've been embarrassed about certain things I've done in my life, and it's really time that all of this gets lifted, gets lifted off my shoulders. So here we go, we're on the couch, Byron's got his hand, yeah, Mike's got his hand, yeah, and we're praying. And after we prayed, Byron said a very interesting thing. He said, "Did you feel anything?" And I'm like, I was a smoker. I really felt like a smoke afterwards, so that didn't happen. And I really had to think about, did I really feel anything? And the only thing that I could actually remember was the serious resistance on my head to the prayer. And prior to that, I'd never experienced spiritual warfare. You know, Satan, although I knew was around, never really affected me. I didn't believe in that kind of stuff. And for the first time, I realized this stuff is really real. There is, Jesus is fighting over spirits, and the devil is there to, you know, he's contending. And I felt that for the first time with the resistance going on. I went to bed that night and I woke up and I thought something serious has happened. I felt wrecked, like a war. A war went through my sleep, and went through to work, and at this point, everything started going wrong. And I thought, no, what's going on here? I had a business partner. We bought into a franchise with a coffee deli, and she went through a rough time, and she had to remove herself from the business. And I was struggling with it. Anyway, the whole business was going flat. Everything was going wrong. I felt the devil's presence around me. There was temptation to do weird things. It really got kind of scary. And I remember going down on my knees saying, "Jesus, I gave my life to you, to feel you, to hear you. I'm not hearing you, but I'm, you know, where are you?" And so February, 28th of February, prior to that, every Sunday I started getting messages, which I didn't really realize because I was so focused on hearing God, this huge change, this massive voice. And, you know, although you're dealing with all these weird things around you, you expect this prayer, you're giving your life to Jesus, now this is all going to go away, and it's not. It's all there. And I decided, okay, I've got to get baptized. And 28th of February, we went down to Melkbos, got baptized. I came up, I saw seagulls. I didn't see doves. And I still didn't hear God's voice, and I was now really getting frustrated because I had all these serious desire to just hear a thundering voice, a clear voice on what I need to do with my business, with my children. Then Ruan came and gave me a call, and I, like I said, I gave him so many excuses, and he said, this was 2 weeks ago, and 2 weeks ago when I said, okay, I'm going to do this, I'm going to talk, it's not going to be easy, it's not going to be comfortable, I started mentally preparing to talk to all of you. And in the preparation, God's voice became so clear. He sent a movie of things that he did for me in my life. I got myself into, and I started realizing that there's so much little things he's sculpturing and changing in me, the way I thought, the way I look at people, the way I relate to the beggars on the street. All these things started changing, and I got myself into a position where, which is what I thought was pretty okay. I'm very bad, if you like me, I'm very bad with having cash on me. So when I get to a parking ticket and you don't have cash, I sort of used to and I'm not very proud of this, and don't do this, but I used to take the ticket, and in the back, the magnetic strip, I used to scratch it or crumble it up, and then get to the ticket and put it in and press the button. So there's something wrong here. And I found myself in this position now, and the next minute I heard, that's not what Christians do. And I was like, okay, I'm gonna. And then as I was walking and I was getting like really uptight that I now have to go find money to go put into the parking ticket, I just realized I heard God. And I was like, yes, Jesus. And then the floodgates opened. I started realizing I about 2 months ago, Peter over there, he offered me a job. It's my boss. He's here today. And I started realizing that the decisions, the way he runs his business is kind of what I want to be part of. It's ethical. It's good. Well done, Peter. You're doing an amazing job. I'm going to end this off. 2006, 13 years ago, told you I had a daughter that I'd never met, never saw. In November, when I prayed with Barent, it was the one message that was quite clear that I realized that I had to, if I wanted to hear God, I got to fix some things. And I realized that I got to fix this thing, and I had a need to fix. I need to get to know my daughter. And at that stage, I didn't know how we were going to do it because I had all this unforgiveness towards the mother, and it was really complicated. And the next minute, I got a call from her uncle, and he said, "Hey, dude, when are you going to get to know your daughter?" And I thought, okay. Anyway, 3 months ago, we met with a psychologist that came up with a great idea that was also seeing my daughter, that we could start getting to know each other on WhatsApp. So we've been speaking for 3 months on WhatsApp, and about a month ago I met her in person. So I just want to... That's bigger than anything money can buy. It's bigger than losing businesses. It's better. It's massive. For me, it's a very special gift from God, and I don't know if anybody can relate to my story, and if you've had really bad passes, but I'd really like at the end of it to, if you can relate to it and you feel that you're not hearing God, and there's a whole lot of hardened heartness that you have, if you can do it for me, you can do it for anyone.
Thanks, Sylvie.
Thanks, man.
Wonderful. We all have a story, and it takes the different paths, and it's lovely to be, the story's not ending. Jody, you can come up so long. And we are going to create a moment, if the Lord in some way, maybe Mike's story today is God sent to you. That you just hold on to that, because we'd love at the end to just create a moment where we can pray with some people. You might feel far away from the Lord or as if he's not speaking, but he has hope that he is. And so Mike's story is about how he got born again in some way. And I've asked Jody to speak on how she's walking with the Lord in situations that not all of us are facing, and some big giants that she's needing to battle, and how the Lord is really beautifully in the story as well. So Jody, thanks so much for your story.
Good morning, everyone. I've come equipped tissues. It's a privilege for me to be here today. On the 9th of April, which was last week, I got up in the morning waiting for a good friend to come and fetch me to go for my chemo session at the cancer care unit. God laid on my heart then that it was time for me to start preparing my testimony. I got to the cancer care, went through the normal process, got my port sorted, got the drips going, and about 12 o'clock, Ruan phoned me and said to me, "Jody, it's Easter Sunday. We would love you to talk." And it always amazes me how God speaks to us. If we look up, we'll see the miracles and all the blessings around us. Just in that, it indicated to me the significance in my life of the death and the rebirth. So my journey started on the 30th of September. Sorry, I just need some water. My beautiful 7-year-old daughter came bounding into the lounge and she wanted some paint and some paper to draw. She was persistent. I gave her the colors, I gave her the paper, and she painted. Not 5 minutes later, she came to me with this picture and said to me, "God asked me to give this to you." Now, I've been in retail for many years, and I'm not sure if you all recognize that, but that is the breast cancer ribbon. I looked at this, and I thought to myself, of all the things my daughter could paint, she's painted me the breast cancer ribbon. Why would she want to give it to me? The following day, she left for Joburg, which is what she did in the holidays, to go and see her father. I got into bed, and for the first time in years, I did a breast examination. And to my dismay, I found a lump the size of a golf ball. I knew then that I needed to get to the doctor. In that following week, before I made the appointment, we had the 412 conference that came up. I went the Tuesday or the Wednesday and the Thursday, and again, I was amazed at how God brings us to these places, because what it did for me was it deepened my relationship with God in preparation for what was to come. The following Monday, I booked a doctor's appointment. I went to go and see him. He sent me for various tests, scans, ultrasounds, you name it, I went for it. When I was lying on the bed having my ultrasound, they called 3 doctors to come and have a look. At this point, I'm still oblivious to what is going on and what lies ahead of me. The one doctor actually said to me, he said, "How long have you had this lump for?" So I said, "I'd only discovered it in the last couple of days." But he looked at me rather strangely because it was so large, and had I not discovered it before. From there, I went back to my doctor. He phoned me on the 14th, and I remember feeling completely overwhelmed. I actually connected with a dear friend of mine, Denise, before I went to the doctor. She had gone through a very similar experience, and she prayed for me before I went. I arrived at the doctor. I walked in, and I sat down. The poor man couldn't start the conversation. Eventually, I put my arm on his hand, and I said, "It's okay. I know I have cancer." He then proceeded to tell me, we went through the whole story, he laid it out for me, he recommended surgeons, and he made me promise, and at that point I knew God was present. He made me promise not to deviate from the treatment plan. His cousin had just recently died of cancer. The poor man was riddled with so much guilt. He felt that if he had done something sooner, he would have been able to save his life. That was my opportunity to talk to the doctor and say, "Please do not feel guilty. You did what you could." As time went on, I then went to the oncologist. She sent me for more tests, more scans. You drink dye, they inject dye. You go through a very lengthy process where they send you from one specialist to another. The first appointment with my oncologist was very, very overwhelming. You walk in there, she has a big TV screen, she faces it towards you, and she starts opening up all your test results. So she starts from the top. They look at your brain, they go down your throat, they go down your lungs, they do your whole body. And I remember in that moment just praying quietly to myself, thinking, dear God, let this please be contained. That was my first blessing. It was. It was contained to the breast, my left breast, and my left lymph node. Sorry, but my mouth is a bit dry here, and my fingers aren't working. One of the side effects from chemo is you can't feel your fingers. So there we go. And you can go. There we go. Okay, there we go. Thank you. You can stand. He's loosening my pages. From there, the doctor mapped out my treatment plan. I was to start with four red devils, now known as four red angels. I was then going to go on to 12 weeks of chemo and then surgery. As time moved forward, so much happened. I had left Woolworths. This was prior to my cancer being diagnosed. I'd started a manufacturing business, which was my dream. Unbeknown to me, my partner had integrity issues, and he re-registered another company and basically took it from underneath our feet. My son, who was working in the factory, was fired because they no longer wanted him around. I was dealing with a loss of hair. I was dealing with nausea. I was dealing with the chemo. I was dealing with the side effects. And the single biggest opportunity that faced me was hours and hours on my own, lying in bed, as my body was weak. It's in these moments you have to stay on the path as it gets very, very dark. And you need to see the light. And this is where I surrender. For me, this was probably the most significant time, as for the first time in my 53 years, I found myself in a position that I could no longer control. And the one thing that had become significant to me is my whole life, I had been in control. I come from a life of physical abuse, emotional abuse, sexual abuse, and as a child, I spent many, many, many hours on my own. And my way of feeling safe and always controlling my situation around me was to control my life. And I realized that I could no longer control this and that I was no longer in control. And in doing so, I suppressed and buried all my pains and hurts from the past. And if any of you know anything about cancer, you will know that stress is the biggest trigger for cancer. And breast cancer talks through emotional pain or nurturing that has not been dealt with. Sorry, Uncle Ruan, I need you to... My fingers. I also sacrificed a marriage of 25 years as I could not see the way forward and I felt completely unloved alone. So before I was diagnosed with cancer, I came down to Cape Town with my 7-year-old daughter. I was now at my weakest and most vulnerable point. I'd been stripped of everything. I'd lost my independence. I'd lost my physical strength. I'd lost my ability to work, support myself financially, control of everyday life, and emotional stability. There was nothing left, but in these moments you realize when you are weak, our Father is strong. And for the first time in my life, I realized, sorry, I've spoken about this, that I was no longer in control. He also showed me that there had been, and I think this was for me significant, I think of what you said, Mike, that in all these years where I felt that I was alone, he showed me that he was actually there every step of the way. He showed me that he had felt all my pain. He had showed me that he had cried every tear. But he had also brought me to this place where I could finally accept, forgive, and let go. And for me, that probably was my most profound moment. So do not fear, for I am with you. Do not be dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you and help you always. Then I moved to my resurrection or my rebirth. 7 months later, 7 chemo sessions down, disappointments as a treatment has not always gone according to my plan. The 12 cycle treatments turned into the double dose because the tumor hadn't shrunk. But I still stand strong with a heart full of gratitude as my journey this far has been filled with blessings and so much love that I've received from everybody around me. Moments that I will treasure forever. Sorry, this is where it gets difficult. The unconditional love from my adopted family next door, Daryl and Catherine. Words can never thank you enough. The day Uncle Daryl took a razor to my head, we sat in silence. There were no words but the Lord's presence, and it was surreal. I felt so much love and kindness. I knew then that I no longer needed hair to hide behind. I could now truly love myself. The male members of the church, for showing me the true role of a father and now a normal family and how a normal family should function. The support from all my dear friends, the love and prayers from the church. I have had people praying for me all over the world. The multiple food trays being delivered to my house day after day. Friends depositing money into my account. My daughter offering me 150,000 rand of her life savings. My son sacrificing his life and his son to come live in Cape Town with me so he could care for me. Sorry, Uncle Ruan, can you turn the page? There we go, that's fine. Yeah, you want to shift them a little bit to the left. My beautiful Taya for holding my hand in bed with her earmuffs on so she can't hear me vomiting at night. The slippers that she puts under my bed so she can bend down and say a quick prayer before she goes to sleep. The love of my sister in England with endless prayers and positive thoughts. The kind messages from my mother suffering from dementia but still ensuring that I have everything that I need. The love from the children and teachers at school as they continue to keep me in prayers and support my little girl. And lastly, the love of my Heavenly Father. It is the Lord who goes before you. He will not leave you or forsake you. Do not fear or be dismayed. It's all about trusting. We have received absolutely everything that we have needed as a family. At no point have we been forgotten. There have been days when I've wondered how we are going to survive, what food we're going to eat, what bill was going to be paid, but by the grace of God, complete trust and faith, all our basic requirements and more have been met. I am constantly in awe and astounded by the providence that comes when you move from a space of fear to a space of trust. Whilst I moved to the end of my chemo plan in preparation for my 12-hour surgery, which is a double mastectomy, lymph nodes removed, ovaries removed, I have had many things to think about. The one single situation that has stood out for me is time and healing is the most important gift you can ever have. So, I have realized that my last leg of the journey for me healing is my divorce from 7 years ago. So, my little daughter has been constantly saying to me, Mommy, it's time for us to go back to Joburg and go and live with Daddy. Now, knowing this and knowing where I come from, that seemed impossible. Because when I left 7 years ago, there was resentment, there was anger, and none of us have spoken since. What I then did was I asked God to lay on my ex-husband's heart. I prayed about it, that should I need and be able to come back to Joburg, he would make a way for me. Unbeknown to me, we were sitting having a discussion one night. My oldest daughter said to me, Mommy, Daddy said, if ever needed, he would take you and Taya in. That was all the confirmation that I needed. I then got hold of him as Taya was with him in the holidays in Joburg, and I scheduled a coffee meeting with him at the airport. On their return, the first thing my daughter said, she walked out of the, she came through the arrival, she grabbed my hand and she said to me, Mommy, please can we go and live in Joburg? It's time. So Wayne and I sat down and we discussed it, and he has agreed. So her and I are moving back to Joburg on the 31st of May, my arms open, ready to receive. The irony of all of this, when I looked at the date, was on the 31st of May, 28 years ago, was the day that we got married. In closing, I would like to honor one of my best friends. I went into hospital to go and have my port put in on the 10th of November. And again, God laid on my heart to give this friend of mine a tinkle. We hadn't connected for years, which I did. His name was Scott. He was lying in the theater or about to go into the theater to have a tumor cut out so they could do a biopsy. It turned out that Scott had a very, very rare form of cancer. His diagnosis was on the 21st of November. They could not find the lesion where it started. It was in his lungs, it was in his muscles, it was in his adrenal, it was in his lymph nodes, it was everywhere. The doctors gave him 6 months. Those 6 months were over December. It felt like the longest 6 months of my life. But little did I know, it was all the time that Scott had left. But in that time, he never stopped encouraging. He spoke to me every single day. He encouraged everybody around him. And in his last moments, I managed to speak to him. And he asked me, or he made me promise, always to live my best life. He made me promise to finish my book, which I will do and dedicate to him. But on the 28th of March, I was sitting at home, and I got this profound message in my head to get up and go for a walk on the beach, which is exactly what I did. I then sat down at the same bench, on the same bench that him and I had sat on when he had come to visit me for a short period in December. As I sat down, I looked out. It was a beautiful evening. The sun was setting, and I had such a warm feeling of relief and peace. 1 minute later, his mother phoned to say Scott had slipped away peacefully. And again, at that moment, I knew, even in the darkest moments, God is always, always with us. Soon, I will have more hair, I hope. I will have a new life. I don't know what the future holds. I still live in the unknown. But the one thing that is sure is God is in control, and he will work this out for my good as his daughter. We don't always recognize the blessing God has placed before us. Look back at your life and take stock of the time God has come through for you. Use this Easter to surrender your life to him so that he can have free rein to unleash his love upon us. Love is a choice. It is a choice to give our lives away to the benefit of another. It's not easy to surrender. It runs counter to our cultures of pride and self-sufficiency. Ask yourself what holds you back from fully devoting your life to God. Don't wait for trauma, sickness, or death. How might your life change if it was fully surrendered to him? If we do surrender to love, what is there to fear? And lastly, remember to always make every minute of every day count. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Jody. I think maybe if I can ask some of the musicians to come up, we'd love to respond to the Lord and just give a moment for that. But I think if we look at this morning, you know, it's life. Life has got children in it, babies being born, dedication. You've got the whole story. People veering off in different directions of life, and some of us find that we really need to battle sickness, death, and the rest. And within all of that, God is. And you know, we love the story. I, you know, as Mike said, you know, when he gives his life to the Lord, now everything needs to be sorted out. And all of a sudden, it doesn't go that way. But we look at Jesus, and I just wanted to read this briefly. It says, he was despised and rejected by men, a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. And as one from whom men hide their faces, he was despised and esteemed, and they esteemed him not. Surely he has borne our griefs and carried our sorrows. Yet we esteemed him stricken and smitten by God and afflicted. But he was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. Upon him was the chastisement that brought us peace. And with his wounds we are healed. All we like sheep have gone astray. We have turned everyone to his own way. And the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. And then in Romans 15, verse 13, it says again, may the God of hope fill you with all joy and peace in believing, so that by the power of the Holy Spirit you may abound in hope.